So let's get into some note investing basics, all right? So if I had to ask you guys right now, what is a note? We just had a beautiful introduction. This is interaction time. What is a note? How many of you guys own a car? Right? How many of you guys pay cash for the car? You know, if you don't have to pay cash, some of you do, right? But you know, what are some of the interest rates when you borrow? What's a note? Some of these interest rates, right? So what's a note? What is a note? I think everybody in the room has been on the borrowing side of a note. What is a note?
A promise to pay.
A promise to pay, right? It's a promise to pay. And what are some of the key ingredients of a note? Now we're going to be discussing today real estate secured notes. But what are some of the things you're looking at? Rate, monthly payment, right? And it's over time, and you focus a lot on the borrower. So you guys typically are the borrower. But what I'm going to train you guys, got to be thinking like a bank. That borrower is a big deal in terms of you collecting that month. It's the capacity to pay, which we'll go into. So we're going to be dealing with that. So everyone understand the basics of a note, right? It's got terms, it's got deadlines, it's got late payments. You've all seen them, right? Everyone's seen them? Because if you bought a house, bought a car, you've signed on the dotted line on a promise to pay, right? Now, as it relates to security, the security instrument, right? So that there, you know, if you don't pay me back, what recourse do I have? What recourse do I have to get my money back that I loaned you? So it's a security instrument. Now I've got a question out there. What's the difference between a deed of trust and a mortgage? Who knows?
One is court driven, the other one is a quicker venue. It's not done in the courts, it's done more on the county or state side.
Okay, go ahead.
Mortgage, you don't actually get title to the property until you've paid off the mortgage. But in a deed of trust, you have title to the property right from the start.
Okay, who agrees?
I don't agree.
Almost right, but there's just some technicalities there. So on a deed of trust, you have title?
No.
Yes.
You have the deed.
You have the deed?
No, you don't.
You do not have the deed.
Yes, it's security.
So what is the deed? Okay, so first let's go. This is a good conversation, right? Because it's important to understand these little nuances. So first and foremost, if I have a promissory note, the bank is going to give me money, right? Out in the public knowledge we hear, I'm going to go and get a mortgage. Do you get a mortgage?
No.
You don't get a mortgage. What do you do?
You give.
So they're giving us money. In return for that money, what do? We give the bank a mortgage if you're in a mortgage state. So there's states across the U.S. that are mortgage states, right? And there's states that are deed of trust states, right? So who knows the difference? You kind of started down that road. So like, these are security instruments. They're not title. Who has title to the property?
The owner.
The owner, right? But what does it have against title? Liens. These are liens that until they're paid off and released, you don't own it free and clear. Do you follow me on that? Right? So like, just for a minute, because this is an important point, because I was very similar. And I was like, well, I control this whole thing because I'm the lender. But what, so a deed of trust and a mortgage both have certain language in them that what? It's called a power of sale clause. What does that mean? Anybody know? It gives you the right to what?
To force a sale.
Why would you want to do that? So over here, I loaned money right here. You gave me back a mortgage or a deed of trust, depending on which state you're in, which basically says if I don't pay you as agreed, you can come and recover your loan and your value of the money from this collateral. You can take my house. So when we sign, we actually give up the right. If we don't do what we say we're gonna do, they could actually come take the house. So there's a clause in there that's it's the power to force sale. And so that's a key deal. You guys all get that? So I have a lien against title, whether that's called a mortgage or whether it's called a deed of trust. Did you guys get that? That's a real common misconception, but I think it's really important to understand. I don't have equitable title. I don't have title to the property, but I control that property through my lien, right? So they got to do what they said they're going to do and pay me like they said they would, right? So here's what's neat. I'm going to give you a term right now that's really important. So you don't sell mortgages, right? So you hear buy and sell mortgages, buy and sell trust deeds, deeds of trust. Trust deeds is a nickname, right, for deeds of trust, right? You actually assign them. Right, so you'll hear about an assignment of mortgage, so write that down, an assignment of deed of trust, right? So there's that's that when you turn, when you buy them, right, it's actually assigned over to you. So now I own the paper. So when you hear paper profits, we're teaching you how to profit from being in the bank's position and owning the paper, right? So, and it's something that I wish, you know, that what we're going to go through today, I wish I would have had when I first got started in real estate, because when you understand this, that, wow, I can actually step in and do that, and wow, I can actually do that without any of my own money. How do I do that? That's kind of like at the highest level. A lot of times it's very simple. I can come in with money, right, and do that. That gets really complex when I'm like keeping a little share for me when I architect a deal and bring in other money. We won't get a lot into that today, but we'll talk about it, right? So does everyone understand promissory note? And what's the security instrument called? Or a mortgage, depending on which state you're in. Does that make sense? So what is the state of Nevada?
Deed of trust.
It's a deed of trust state, right? What does that mean, deed of trust versus mortgage? You got into it, you started to introduce it. So you have judicial versus non-judicial. Which one is judicial?
Mortgage.
What does that mean when they say judicial?
Mortgage.
So if I want to enforce my mortgage, my power to sell the property and force a sale, what do I have to do? I actually file a lawsuit, right? And I'm actually putting a lawsuit in there. There's a process that it goes through. And can those be contested? And when they get contested, what does that do to your legal bill? Okay, so that's why some people don't prefer to invest in
mortgage
states. If you know what you're doing and you're good at working things out where other people are running from, what typically happens? You can go in there and make a boatload of money, right? But a lot of people, so in deed of trust states, a lot of times you're paying more for those assets, right? And that's just how it works. But it's very methodical. There's a foreclosure trustee, right, that you hire to do that. And they go out, they're that neutral third party because you got a beneficiary, right? You got the lender on that, the trustee that's, you know, then you got the person that made the actual loan. So that's important. Is that a foundation? Any questions on that? Like, ask them if you got them. So everyone's like clear as mud, or do we got this? We got it? Everyone good? Man, coach, you got a sharp group here.
I just want to clarify what you were saying about like the, where they pursue the clause or the clause that was in there, would you call it?
The power of sale.
Power of sale clause. Is that the same as the due on sale clause?
It is not the same.
Okay.
Right? Who knows what the due on sale is? Not to get sidetracked, but the due on sale.
If you transfer title.
If title is transferred or sold, like if title changes hands, mm-hmm. The bank, would you want that? If you were the lender, would you want them transferring title to multiple people? No, I underwrote the file. I underwrote it, and I decided to make a loan to you, right? So if you decide to transfer it, hey, I can call this loan due and foreclose. I don't want to be subject to have to, right? So can that get triggered when you sell? It can. If it's a performing loan and you're getting your payment, sometimes banks are less likely to worry about that, right? So I don't know about you, Coach. You know, I've only been investing for about 13 and a half years, and I have not seen a due on sale clause triggered. Right? I haven't seen it. I've, you know, maybe heard from somebody that it happened, right? But, you know, we're actually going to be going into some new territory where, because it's involuntary foreclosure when we foreclose from second position, right? And we're not that original beneficiary on the deed of trust. So we have a conversation to have with the legal department to see if we can't create some equity and buy down notes like you were talking about. So is that helpful so far for you guys?
Yeah.
All right, so now let's take it to the next level. First versus second. You guys just flag me when it's a break time, right?
Yeah, I got
coming
it.
Up on you. Got it? So first versus seconds. What does that mean? Senior versus junior.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I know there's, Nevada's a hotbed for HOA opportunities, right? And what senior to what, junior to what? What does that mean? You guys are gonna present to capital. So the more you guys practice explaining this to a group like this, and we're in a safe zone here. We're in a safe zone. If it doesn't come out exactly right, don't freak out, right? We're gonna help you kind of do that. Go ahead.
First in time, first in line.
I like that, but what does that mean?
Senior.
Junior. Why is that important?
When the asset gets sold, who gets paid first?
Who gets paid first, right? So in a foreclosure process, right? Right, so when you hear loan to value, so LTV, we're all familiar with LTV, right? Who knows what ITV is?
Ooh, income.
Ooh, did I stump this sharp Outback group? ITV, write that down. Write that down. Sometimes it's your LTV. What's LTV?
Loan to value.
You guys are awesome. You guys are awesome. What does that mean? What does loan to value mean? And we're going to come back to senior first in time. I like that. First in time, first in line, senior, junior. What does LTV mean?
The percentage of loans against the value of the property.
Yeah, so if I have, you hear people say, I will only loan up to 70% of the value of the property. What does that mean? I'm only going to give you 70 grand on 100,000. Why do they do that?
To protect themselves.
To protect themselves against what?
Against loss.
If you don't pay me back, you gave me a mortgage, I only went up to 70%, I got a 30% cushion, because what happens to the interest clock? It keeps ticking, right? So it could be more than 70, plus foreclosure costs, plus they thrashed the house and I gotta fix it up to sell it. I need a cushion, right? So some people want a cushion, right? And we're gonna show you some stuff that, you know, sometimes might not make a lot of sense. And we don't, that's a more speculative portion. I don't recommend you spend a ton of time there, but we invest. We've done a lot in that area, but sometimes where you're kind of behind that, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So coming back to this, right? Coming back to this, ITV, what does that mean? So LTV in a downtrending market or a crash, did we experience that recently?
Yeah.
What happened to our LTV numbers? So LTV, were they in the 60 to 70% range?
Yeah.
What happened when the value dove to way down? What happened to your... Was that 90? So sometimes it went up to 200%, right? Because now if it was originally a $100,000 loan and the house was maybe worth 150 and now the house is worth 50 grand, that maybe wasn't this area, well, maybe some parts of it, this area did affect it, right? But what happened now to your LTV number? It skyrocketed, and now what's the bank or the lender's security position if they have to go foreclose? Are they going to take a bath?
Yeah.
They're going to lose money, right? So what is ITV? What do you think ITV is? Anyone have an idea?
Investment.
I am really excited that I'm at least teaching you one thing. This is really cool. I'm like going to be happy. That was worth my drive.
Part of the Outback, you chartered a new character.
That's it. Look at you. That's awesome. Okay. That's a writer down. This is a writer down. All right. It's a writer down. All right. So anyone got a guess?
Income to value.
Oh, we're getting so close.
Investment.
Yeah.
Who gets? Everyone give a round of applause. Tell me your name.
Cheryl.
Cheryl, you're amazing. Investment to value. What does that mean? So I'm buying notes. So an LTV might be 200%. I'm going to come in and buy this note. And I want to be, who makes the rules with what they invest on their own money? You do. Can you set parameters as to what investment to value number you want it to be?
Yes.
So what does that mean?
It means whatever money you put into it, you want to make sure you get a certain percentage of it. Like almost like a return of investment, but you want to make sure.
Almost, so a yield, or what we're looking for in terms of yield or ROI, that's a little different than ITV.
It's what you're paying for the note.
So just like loan to value, they make decisions based on the loan percentage to the value. So ITV, if I come in, and there might be a 200% loan to value on that property. Let's say the loan is 200 grand from the original loan. the house is worth 100, where do you typically want to be as an investor? If most banks like 70%, is that kind of where you want to be? So the LTV is 200% because of the market fluctuations. But I'm a new investor. I'm coming in fresh, and I'm going to buy this. What do I need? And I need a cushion, right, if I have to foreclose? And I, because I'm now buying the bank's position, right? So I'm going to buy you here. So this is really important in pricing, right? You're going to hear, right, you're buying it, you know, a certain percentage or cent, you know, certain, like say 15, 20, 30 cents on the dollar. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean on how much is still owed? They call that the UPB. Write that down. UPB is unpaid principal balance. That is your loan. That unpaid principal balance is actually the LTV number, right? So I do pay attention to that. But what I'm buying for, so you'll hear, when you got to know when a note seller, which one are they, you know, we're, as investors, we want to evaluate on an ITV percentage. So if it was good enough for the banks at 70%, I probably, that was their loan to value to start, but what was it also at the same time? If they're an investor, right, or the bank, it's also, so at their initial investment or loan, right, when they first start, before the market did this, was their LTV the same as their ITV?
Yes.
Yes. So now if I come in and I want my ITV to be 70%, right, at the max, let's just say that's what the parameter I've set. Is it, can it be different than the LTV?
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense? Did you guys all, this is important because you want to decide what's my ITV that I'm just going to stick to. Because once it creeps up, if you end up having to foreclose, you know, now you're in that, the deal gets skinny, right? So everyone got that?
Yeah.
Right, that's really important. So when you talk, let's jump back now.
We got here, close that out.
So first versus second, what does that mean? So if I need to foreclose, we got that. So second, what I love about seconds is you can still get, kind of put your foot in the door on a deal. What happens, just, we're gonna kind of talk openly just for a minute about seconds. How many of you are familiar with a short sale and how a short sale works? What is a short sale? What's a short sale? So we just talked about LTV. It's a situation where more is owed than the house is worth. So if they want to sell it, they got to go back to the lender and get a short payoff or a discounted payoff approved to let that sale go through, right? Because if the $200,000 is owed and the house is worth 70, I mean, the bank's taking a major haircut. They have to agree to that, right? So it's a short sale, right? So what has to happen to transfer title to a new buyer? If there's five liens on the property in a short sale, what has to happen? All those different liens or note holders, first in, what'd you say?
First in time,
first in line, right? So the first, you gotta go back. If the first is underwater, are they gonna take a discounted payoff? Yes, they have to agree to it for that sale to go through. What if they're not?
They probably won't
because they have to do their numbers, right? Now, if you're a second mortgage holder, think about it for a minute. The first approved a discounted payoff and or whatever, but the second, you hold the second. In this transaction, you got all these different people. You got a realtor that wants to get paid their commission. They work their tail off to get the bank to approve a discounted payoff. You got the new buyer, right, that wants to buy. They've qualified for a loan, and they're trying to give the second a major haircut, right? Who, yeah, if the second does not agree to a major, major discount, does that sale go through?
No.
Yeah.
Are you foreclosed?
No. Why? Because that lien has to be released to transfer title. Yeah. So what does the first, so that whole deal blows up if the second won't say yes. You guys understand that? So if you actually acquire some of these second mortgages at a deep discount, because some of them are underwater, right? And you want to go, and some, there's people who have strategies that they will go buy stuff that has active listings on. They'll go take out people who own seconds, and they're just raking it in. Why are they doing that? Because those people think they're going to get wiped out if they don't take it. They can go do that. But what I'm saying is, you guys understand the power and control you can have even in a second position. Is first position more secure and predictable than second?
Yes.
Totally. Right? But can you still do really well as a second mortgage holder?
Yes.
Right? But it's a totally different game.
That's totally dependent on the first being healthy and being able to come out and to even get a shot at it, right?
That's a really good point, right? It's a really good
point
because the interest is accruing.
You have to do your upfront work to know.
Exactly.
To take that position, whether it's
exactly
profitable.
And Aaron's going to cover a little bit on due diligence when you buy notes, and those are one of some of the things we check, right? If it says on a credit report that their first mortgage is $150,000, right? But they actually had a loan modification and there's a deferred principal balance. Does that happen sometimes where they push some of that interest they owe on the back of the loan that you didn't know about when you decided to buy the second? What did that happen? Are you a little bit out to lunch? You know what I mean? So you need to know. We'll show you a few things that you can do that. So other questions here? I saw a hand. Go ahead.
So I understand that in some states they have a cram down or ways that the state actually has mandated that they can reduce the value of the second regardless. Is that true?
It is actually true on investment properties where no equity is present.
So they're
and
not
or the equity in the property.
Is it non-owner-occupied investment property?
It's typically non-owner-occupied on a cram down. It's a lien strip, which we'll cover a little bit today, because we talk about that's a risk.
Non-owner.
That's a risk, right, that you would get stripped in bankruptcy. There's a big Supreme Court decision. Some of you may be following this, some of you may not be. But, you know, over in the 11th District, they were trying on a Chapter 7 bankruptcy where they could actually strip out second liens completely and not have to pay them at all in a Chapter 7. Now, Chapter 13, that's a reorganization, and they actually have that, and that is something that's a risk, investing in seconds. That's why some people steer clear of seconds. But if you have specialized knowledge and know how to buy those at the right price, and you know exactly how bankruptcy works, can you have, it's all specialized knowledge, right? So we actually had to beat a bankruptcy that we did, and I talked a little bit about that. Half of you in the room saw that last time I was here. You know, I don't know if I have time to go through that case study, but that's a big deal. Other questions on that? Real good. So you helping with some of the note basics here? Hold on, and it's frozen. What happened here? Let's do this. Oh, there it is. Okay, so real quick, this is really important to understand. And Aaron's going to go a little deeper into how this affects valuation, but it's important to understand some of these terms. All right, so it kind of is just like they sound. So performing, you're going to hear that, right? Performing, they're performing. What do we talk about? A promise to pay is what a note is, right? So they, when you hear paid as agreed, that's a term you'll hear. They're paying as agreed. So they're current on their mortgage. And you want to know that even when you're buying a house subject to the existing financing, how many months, you know, you'll hear how many months down are you current? Because if you're going to take over that property subject to a loan, you might have to reinstate the loan and bring current the mortgage so it's performing, right? So that's important. Pay as agreed since inception. That's typically what a performing note is. A re-performing note, how many of you heard that term before? So in the industry, the note industry, that's a re-performer. I'm buying a re-performer. What does that mean? At one point in time, the borrower ran into a temporary hardship, right? A financial hardship, and they stopped paying, right? And so typically, there's a more serious gap in payment, but at some point they were able to modify the loan, kind of work things out, get things back on track, and work with the lender, restructure some debt, right? So if you guys, some of you here might be interested when I talk about some of these models coming up, right? Which I think is coming up next. But you guys might be interested. That's where you roll up your sleeves and you're actually working out restructuring debt. We do a lot of that out of our office. Okay, and it's good. So self-performing, right, is they're just kind of, you know, they're kind of, you know, and you might have even been in a position like this when you fall in hard times, but you'll know people that maybe have where they get behind 30 days and it's hard to get caught back up. So they have what's called a rolling 30 on their credit report. It's a rolling 30-day late. and it hammers their credit, but they never quite get back on time. So they're what we call a slow pay. They're subperforming. Non-performing, right, is just exactly what it sounds. They're, at the moment, it's not performing. So would it make sense that you could pick up a loan cheaper during the time frame where it's not being paid as agreed than it would be if it's performing?
Yeah.
Right? So the valuation, that's really important. So there's a lot of opportunities with each type that we're going to get into. So everyone got that? We're all experts on the basics, right? So this is key terminology that you'll hear as I go through these models.